your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair in the Coast Guard cutter Ingham, her hull number W Whiskey 35. And I am, my heart and soul are just awash with memories, because this is a ship in which I served both as XO, or second in command, in Vietnam. And then when we returned to the United States, I fleeted up and became her captain myself. And so I am indeed sitting up in the captain's chair. I was able to hoist myself up here without any assistance, although there were people standing by to help. And I've got three friends with me who all know that I do not have guests. I only have friends that come on with me from the captain's chair. And so we're going to take our time today to talk a little bit about that time in our lives. And also, I hope to get to a couple of my regular features. And I hope also to talk just for a few minutes about my daughter Laurie's wedding, because there were some interesting things that happened out of that. All of these things are good. Even the memories are good. And the memories are good because they are made up of people like the first friend that I'm going to bring on, who was my XO and another one of my ships. And the way we're going to do this, of course, is that I'm just going to hand the telephone over to him. And so the first one is Captain Robert Hyde, who himself is a captain in his own right. And he started out his Korean career as the captain of one of the 82 footers that served in Vietnam. So I always refer to my XOs, first of all, as number one. It is the British tradition that the XO is also addressed as number one. But in Bob's case, he was much more than just number one. He has been a friend. Both he and I have lost our wives long before it was their time. And I subjected to him as his captain to many vicissitudes, and yet he remains stalwart and true. So without any prompting or any other kind of rehearsal, I'm going to pass the telephone over to my number one and let him have it me for all he will wish. And then when it's time, I'm going to give him the cut signal and he's going to hand the phone back. So, number one, it's over to you.
Thank you, Captain Joe. It's a real pleasure to be here with you aboard the Ingham and with the Ingham's caretakers. It's a beautiful day here in Key West. Pretty special, I remember. Coming in and out of Key West while I was on the Cuban interdiction patrols back in the 1980-81 area. We were in here periodically with many tows and sometimes with many people that we had picked up struggling at sea to get to the United States. But it was a beautiful place. This was all aboard Cherokee. Our normal home port was Little Creek, Virginia, but we came south to assist with all the Coast Guard duties required down here. It's great to be back. Especially with Captain Joe. Memories overwhelm us.
So, number one, charity requires that you not detail some of those memories, but they are fresh in my heart. And, of course, many of them have to do with times that you and I spent together. One of the things that we did together was to take the fisheries patrols up off of the Grand Banks. And on return from one of those patrols, it was in my heart and soul to see if we couldn't have the crew perform all of the functions that happen when a ship comes to anchor at the same time.
Captain Joe, I need to interrupt you just for a second. When you hand it back to the gentleman, he is not speaking directly into the microphone, and we can barely hear him. So just be sure that when you hand it back that he's able to do that, please.
Roger Wilco.
Okay, Captain. Thanks.
I will take care of that. So, number one, my engineer has just reminded me that when I'm going to hand this back to you, because I want your description of the time in which we made all of those functions try to happen at the same time. Boat boom swung out, accommodation ladder, and when you have the phone in your hand, you want to talk directly into the tube. Truman just told me that some of what you said almost got lost. So it's coming back to you for your description of that particular evolution.
The seamanship exercise that Captain Joe refers to is coming to anchor, where numerous events must happen simultaneously, requiring someone on the jack, someone on the flags, signal flags, the national ensign in the stern, people at the boat davits ready to lower the boat, other deck force personnel to swing out the wooden boat boom perpendicular to the hull, and at the same time lower the accommodation ladder. All things were to get to their final resting point, flags close up, boats in the water, boat boom perpendicular, and ladders where they were supposed to be, all at the same time. Well, when the whistle went and the anchor rattled down the hawse pipe, things didn't quite go that quickly. It was a struggle. It was a straggle. It was, must confess, less than seamanlike, much to the captain's utter astonishment. He thought we were better than that. So what did we do? We hauled everything back up, and we're going to do it again. Second time around, there goes the whistle. There goes the anchor. Things are going up. Flags are going which way? Everything was going somewhat in the correct direction, but not altogether. Eventually, the exercise was terminated while we were still at anchor. And we had to put everything back in its normal position. But exercise was one of futility. And I'll let Captain Joe comment on the success.
All right, XO. So we had to log an incomplete and unsuccessful exercise. But that didn't mean that we couldn't have done it should we have ever had to for, let's say, the visiting commandant to show off my crew. That was a lovely ship and a lovely crew, and it was made so by your, and I'm being serious now, by your loyalty and by your attention to duty, and some of the things that we did together, many of the things that we did together did in fact succeed the way they were supposed to, just because that one exercise never did. I have commented before on this broadcast, and will do so again, the particular relationship between a ship's executive officer, or XO, and her captain. And in particular, am I reminded of some of those pieces of that relationship, because I only did one XO tour. That was in Vietnam, and that was with Captain Neil O. Westfall. And when we came back from overseas, I pleaded up and I relieved him. It was time for him to go ashore for his shoreside tour before he became an honored retiree. And so I relieved him and thus earned the right to sit up in the captain's chair, which I am now occupying. But during the more than a year that we were together, where I served him as his XO, we also had many adventures together. And I have to say that I love Neil as a person. He was a wonderful, wonderful person, a wonderful man. He loved his ship and he loved his crew. And the first interview that we had together, when I reported that I had become his executive officer, he outlined for me, and he said, XO, just give me a ship that is clean, a ship that carries out all of her missions, no excuses. He did not use the expression wine, mule, and puke. That's one of mine. But he said, no excuses. Don't waste my time with that. And above all, take care of my crew. Well, all of those principles that he elucidated our first time together were exactly the same ones. And when he got me as his XO, I had already had two commands at sea. And so he was not getting any Cherry. He was not getting any Virgin in terms of working with a crew and also working with accomplishing the mission. And so he and I got along extremely well together, and yet he was a real challenge to serve because he had some idiosyncrasies, one of which was that he did not like to have chaplains in his ship, and the chaplains always came over from the oiler when we were on the gun line, and they would always come over from the oiler, and I would be handling the ship, or I would be training one of the other officers to handle the ship. And all the time that I served Neil, he never handled the ship himself. So I don't know whether he was any good at it. He always either expected me to or to have one of the other officers that I would be training. But usually for UNREPs, underway replenishments, of which we did over 60, and he knew that a chaplain was coming because it would show up on the manifest, and he would say, XO, when the chaplain is halfway across in the high line, be right over the water between the two ships, he'd say, just nudge Ingham over a little bit and nudge her over enough so that the chaplain would get dunked in the water. And I would always say, Captain, this would be a reflection on your XO and my ship handling skills. And I said, I happen to believe that I'm the best ship handler in the fleet. So I don't intend, unless you make it an absolute requirement, that I drop him into the water. And he would then say, well, all right, you don't have to do that, but don't ever bring him up to meet me in the cabin. And I would say, aye, Captain, don't worry about that. I will make sure that he never finds you. So when the chaplains would come aboard, they would come down and become part of the wardroom mess. And the chaplain would say, XO, when am I going up to meet the captain? It's one of my requirements in my checklist. I have to meet the captain and find out what I can do to be of service to him and his crew. Chaplain, don't you worry about it. Let me just, you just deal with me when it comes to taking care of the crew. The captain and I have already worked that out. And your presence in the cabin to meet with him is not only one of the requirements, it is a requirement that you not. And therefore, it will never happen. So my next friend is Bill, and Bill is the head of the Ingham Museum. And I want Bill to come on over and give you a few words about the way Ingham is today, what we have done, what he has done. And I have to say, he's done an absolutely magnificent job. The only thing that I take issue with is that the stack is the wrong color, and I hope that we're going to be able to rectify that. I would even pay for that personally to have her painted the proper color. So, Bill, I am now handing the phone over to you. Remember that XO did not speak properly into the microphone, so ask that you do that, and you are without restriction as to what you might want to say about Ingham, her present condition, and anything else that you would like to say. I also mentioned that Bill is, like XO and myself, a Vietnam veteran, and we've been telling some Vietnam stories while waiting for Truman to engineer for me. So, Bill, here it is. It's over to you.
Thanks a lot, Joe. I went to Coast Guard in 1955, retired in 78. So we pretty much all covered the same period of time. And at any rate, after I retired, I was up at Patriots Point one time, and I saw the Ingham sitting there, and it really looked sad. I thought, why would they take the most decorated ship in Coast Guard history as a museum and just let it sit there and deteriorate? So I went up and talked to them, and I said, I'll take that ship off your hands. And they said, well, good, you can have it, because we were going to scrap it or reef it. So I took it 11 years ago and moved it down here to Key West and dry docked it 10 years ago, and hadn't been dry docked in 26 years, and brought her up to condition, made her hull good and solid. And now it's time for dry dock again. We're going to be heading up to Tampa, hopefully, in mid-November, and we're still trying to raise funds. We have about another $500,000 to go. And if we don't get it all, we probably have one of the local banks help us out for a while. But she's definitely going into dry dock and get back in pristine condition again, which is the way she should be. Just because the stack is white, which the good captain here has always been upset about that. That's an interesting story. The last commanding officer that had the ship, stacks and spars are traditionally painted a spar color, but a buff color, and it's been Coast Guard tradition for years. And so, but at any rate, he heard that they were possibly going to decommission the ship, so he painted it to look like one of the new models, the new 378, with a white stack and black mast, and thought he could move around in the fleet, they wouldn't notice him. But at any rate, that's the way the ship wound up, and eventually I'm sure she'll get back to her original paint colors. But the Ingham has quite a history. She served for 52 years, and she was MacArthur's flagship when he returned to Corregidor in the Philippines. She was had several flag officers on board when she was the amphibious flagship in the Pacific. She had Admiral Struble, who was on board for the invasions of Leyte Gulf, which was the largest naval battle of the Pacific. And then at the tail end, she had Admiral Buckmaster on board as a flag officer, and he'd been the commanding officer of the aircraft carrier Yorktown when it sunk at the Battle of Midway. So a lot of high-powered guys have walked these decks, and she's got 21 ribbons and 14 battle stars and two Navy presidential citations. So she's worth saving, and I just love it when the old-timers come back and get to visit their old ship, because it does bring back a flood of memories for them. And that's what my enjoyment in doing this is, to see people come back and just really really relive those years. Pretty hard to do otherwise. So that's about it, and I'll turn it back to the captain.
So thank you, Bill. And you referred to the incredibly large collection of ribbons and awards that Ingham carries, and two of those are presidential unit citations, and I was XO in her when she was part of operations that earned those two presidential unit citations. We were part of not only Operation Market Time, which was the operation that interdicted junks coming down from the north, but we were also part of Operations Sea Lords and Old Raiders. And you need to go into books like Captain Alex Larzelier's The Coast Guard in Vietnam to learn about those particular operations, because Alex went to the same high school I did. He's several years behind me at the academy. And he wrote the definitive history of the Coast Guard in Vietnam, and that includes the operations that Bill, who you just heard, and my XO, Captain Hyde, who you also heard, and myself, each of us served in different places and different parts of the operation, all of the operations in Vietnam, and all of us had a piece of the stuff that Alex wrote about in the book called The Coast Guard in Vietnam. I picked up a new friend. Actually, I've known who he was for a long time, who was just kind of wandering around down by the hotel, and that's Captain Gordon Bell. And Gordon is here because he is representing the Coast Guard gunner Campbell, and Campbell is a sister to Ingham. And Campbell is a particular interest to me because I made three or four cadet cruises in Campbell. And so I'm going to have Gordon come over here and take the microphone for a minute and talk about, he's busy photographing me being pontificating from the captain's chair in my old home, Ingham. But I'm going to ask Gordon to speak a few words about Campbell, because he sailed in Campbell, and she is a sister to my Ingham. And so over to you, Gordon. Here you go.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Captain. And I served on Campbell as an enlisted man, but I went on to Coast Guard retirement and went through all the ranks up to Chief Petty Officer and Warrant Officer, and was commissioned and retired as a captain. But Campbell was always my love, as even an enlisted man. I have since done a reunion in 1970 at Patriots Point, South Carolina, when the Ingham was still under the park commission there before it got moved. And we had a fantastic reunion. We had over 275 people, and they were always giving great raves of camaraderie, and we had a big luncheon on the aircraft carrier Yorktown. And it was just a wonderful event. So I'm very happy to be here in Florida and Key West and with these gentlemen of so much fame and Coast Guard history. It's my honor to be here with them. But Captain Joe, thanks so much.
All right, Captain. So it was a pleasure to be able to put you on and to talk about Ingham's sister. There is another Ingham coming. She is going to be, I am told she's under construction, and that she is going to join the fleet in 2024. I intend not only to be alive then, I intend to be upright, and although I will not have the right to sit in her captain's chair, I will look wistfully at it. I will stroke the arms and wish the captain that is going to be her plank owner, her pre-commissioning commanding officer, and then her captain when she's put into commission in the fleet. She, of course, will have to earn her own bank of ribbons. Each ship only is entitled to show the ribbons and awards that she herself has earned. And in Ingham's case, it's going to be hard to come up with 14 battle stars and two presidential unit citations. But it will be to her captain and her crew to build her own record. But she, the new Ingham, will carry with her all of the best wishes of all of us who have served in this one, and the spirit, the fighting spirit that characterized Ingham for her over 50 years of life is going to be part of the tradition which we will pass on to the new one, and I intend to be there. And should I be given the opportunity, I always will make suitable, pithy, and not always short remarks. A couple of pieces of my regular features. First of all, about the binnacle list, which I've moved to the aft end of my program today. It's really hard to talk about the binnacle list being here in Key West because, first of all, this is one of my favorite places in the world, the Florida Keys. And the last time that I came through the Keys, I had brought Mary R. for her first visit to the Keys and to Key West. And, of course, now she is with me in memory only. And so the Florida is Florida Keys in particular, unlike our Pacific Northwest, is white and blue. The Pacific Northwest, of course, is always green and blue. And as much as I love Florida, I will be coming back to the Pacific Northwest to broadcast live from the captain's chair a week from today. And then a week from that, having heeded the pleas of my listenership, Mate Madeline and I will do chapter 2, volume 2, the second edition of the Night Order book of the captain and the mate, which will be 2 weeks from today on the 12th of October. I've been getting so many people who enjoyed the first version of the captain and the mate, and so we've decided that we're going to do another one. And we have a lot of things to talk about that we did not get to last week or the last time that we did it. So listening to all of you begging and pleading, I'm beginning to believe that what you really want is to hear the mate and not the captain. Well, that is Tango Sierra. That's not the way it works. It remains the captain's program, and Madeline and I will team up and work together to give you another good program. A couple of things that the binnacle list reminds me that even though I am far away from you in Florida, and the sky is blue and the clouds are white and all of the surroundings are the white that is so characteristic of Southern Florida, that I remain very much aware of all of you who are on the binnacle list, who are dealing with all sorts of problems, which are not only physical, but mental, emotional, financial. All of those things your captain is very much aware of. And so from Florida, I send you my best wishes. It is my wish and my desire and my command that all of you follow the instructions. Those of you who are eligible for that third shot, take it. Those of you who have not yet gotten your shot, and in particular as children become eligible. We all remember that the children are the ones, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. All of those are the generations that are going to come behind us, and it is necessary that all of the things that be done that are necessary to keep them healthy so that they can carry on with the obligations to be semper paratus. Gordon, do you have grandchildren? So Captain Bell, who is standing right next to me, has just reported that he has 5 grandchildren, which means that his family has been slacking off because Mary R. and I have 18. Oh, and Gordon says he's got one on the way. So all of these things are really important to your captain because they are the legacy that we pass on. And not only the memories, but the things that we talk about here in the bridge of this fine ship. And the memories which are so sharp even today. I can go back out on the bridge. I can start issuing the commands to the engine room to go up or down one turn, to hold position in the alongside the oiler or the ammunition ship, which we did over 60 times off the coast of Vietnam. And I see that looking at this time, not at the clock on the bulkhead in the Gene Bosch studio, but the clock that's on the bulkhead, the after bulkhead of my old home, Ingham, and looking at my large watch, which is has been with me for many, many years, an Omega Seamaster. You would think that I would have only a Seamaster, and that I'm indeed coming up on the end of our time together. But it has been made particularly poignant and particularly sharp for a couple of reasons. First of all, the last time that I was here, I brought Mary R. up to the bridge, and we then interred the ashes of a previous Ingham captain, and they are reposing in the safe in the captain's cabin right next to the bunk that both Neil used and then I occupied when I was her captain. So those are memories fairly recent, but then I go back to 1969, right after Tet of 68, and all of the fire support missions, all of the missions that the all right, Truman just cut me off, so we'll see you next week. There we go.